Support for this segment and the following message provided by Freak Out and Carry On, a new podcast about politics through the lens of history. Hosted by journalist Ron Suskind and historian Heather Cox Richardson. Available wherever you get podcasts and on the WBUR Listen app.
Virginia, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Because I'm frankly infuriated by this conversation.
Okay.
Actually, while I was listening, I heard him say that college debt is not a big deal for the upper middle class.
Yeah, he just
and
said
I thought,
it.
Who is this insane person to be saying these things? I live in a community that is one of the most affluent in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
I'm a liberal, and I choose to live in this community because for where the jobs are, this is a community that I feel my kids are safe. I feel like there's a certain kind of lifestyle I can live. But I could also get this lifestyle in a community, let's say in South Carolina or in Texas or someplace else where there were jobs, and it would cost a lot less. A lot of what you're talking about has to do with the cost of living. Number one. Number two, this notion that I don't recognize how blessed I am that I can live in a community where my kids aren't having horrible things happen to them or gunfire going off or something like that, and I don't appreciate it is crazy. And third, you know, this is a community, for instance, that everybody, you know, it's double income, and lots and lots of people work. And so, as you pointed out, two nurses can work, and they get into your into your strata.
Yeah.
But I used to work for trying to develop low workforce housing in Winchester, and we were looking at people like nurses as people who needed to have help getting into the housing market here. And so, I just feel like you're just approaching this thing in a really peculiar way.
Virginia, hang on. I'm extremely glad for your call. Kind of get out of my face, Richard Reeves' response here. And let's put you and Richard in the same conversation. I mean, this is your tough audience, Richard. And
yeah.
Virginia's infuriated by your take on this, and you can hear why. What do you say?
So, first of all, thank you for the call and for your honesty. And in some ways, I feel I should apologize that you're infuriated, but I think it's an inevitable part of the message is that we have to have these uncomfortable conversations. You're right, Virginia, that in many places, a high cost of living requires a higher income, and people choose to live in somewhere that's more expensive. And you're also right that education is hugely important, which is one of the reasons you've chosen it. And I should be really clear that nothing in my argument or my book is about blaming parents for wanting to be good parents. I have kids myself, and I'm really trying very hard to help prepare them for a successful and happy life. But I do think that the issue of, say, college and kind of college debt brings up, I think, is a good example of the problem, which is that the upper middle class who send their kids, by and large, to four-year, I don't know what you've done, Virginia, to four-year, good four-year colleges, even if they're quite expensive, the evidence is that, yes, they may well end up with quite significant college debt, but they will also end up with well-paid jobs, and they'll be able to pay that debt back. There's been no increase in the percentage of household income going to support college debt among those who go to good four-year colleges. The problem of college debt is people who actually take on smaller levels of debt to go to poor quality colleges, very often for-profit ones, and get into real trouble. That's where the default rates are highest. That's where it's most difficult. But we don't talk about that because that's not the bit of the American society that we live in or that we're concerned about. So we might look at, God, have you seen how expensive so-and-so liberal arts college is or how expensive UVA's got? That is not where the college debt problem is because those people are going to graduate. And by and large, they're going to get good jobs. And so what happens then, I use this example in the book, is if we're serious about, and you've talked about affordable housing, you're right to say that the definition of affordability changes in different places. And one of the reasons it's so hard to get affordable housing is of how expensive land is in some of the most prosperous areas. And that's because of the over-regulation and the use of zoning for single-family dwellings and the resistance of even liberal upper-middle-class people to more mixed-use residences.
Which can get very fierce in a hurry, that resistance.
Yeah, I know, but I think these are touchy subjects, but that's precisely why people won't talk about them. But if we don't talk about them, then we are going to drift, as you said, Tom, into a classless society. There are massive tax breaks in the forms of things like 529 plans, which I opened my book with, which go to upper-middle-class families to help them save for college.
Tax-free saving for college savings.
Yeah, it's a Bush-era tax cut, but it was actually Nancy Pelosi and Chris Van Hollen and other people who really killed it when Obama tried to get rid of that, because actually the upper middle class have really come to believe this. It's a myth, frankly, that they need all this help to kind of pay for college and that there's this huge problem with debt. And so they cling to these Bush-era tax cuts with a ferocity that was one of the reasons I ended up writing the book, because I just genuinely think there's a failure to recognize what life is like for the rest of the 80%. And so you end up convincing yourself that things are really pretty tough for me. Well, they're not as tough as people pretend they are. And if we continue to believe that, we'll never have more progressive policy.
But you can hear Virginia saying, look, what do you want? You want me to give my kids a lousy education? You want them to put them in the way of gun violence? I mean, I'm just trying to live here.
And that's a really important point, which is that, look, I think anybody who has, and particularly if you're from the bottom 80%, say you're in the bottom 20%, actually the people that get quite angry with me over often, people say, look, if I had the money, I'd be doing all those things. What's wrong with you? Stop blaming them. That's what I want to do. So it's not just the top 20% that you can upset with all of this. No, there's a big difference between being a good parent and living, as I do, in a safe neighborhood with good public schools and so on, and rigging the system in our favor. And so when we're doing things like zoning people out of our neighborhoods, resisting the integration of our schools in various ways, you just saw that in Charlotte, for example. Even Massachusetts tried to pass a bill to have more inclusionary zoning. It died in the last session. And so even quite liberal places, the idea that we're actually going to change the status quo around housing, around education, around taxes. Try getting rid of the $70 billion tax mortgage interest deduction, which is just a handout to the upper middle class. You meet fierce resistance. And so I'm interested in that resistance. And I think the resistance does rely on this sense of, look, I'm working really hard. I'm doing everything right. Leave me alone. But I think unless we kind of have that difficult conversation, then we're not going to make very much progress of all these other things that people say that they want. It requires us to sort of recognize that we're perhaps not as badly off as we think we are in order to give up some of that. So I'm not saying any parent who treats their own child as a social policy intervention has something wrong with them, in my view. That's not what I'm asking for. What I'm saying is, okay, so how did you react when they integrated your schools? How did you react when they put more affordable housing in your backyard? Are you going to use legacy preferences when your kids go to college? Did you help just get an internship sorted out for someone who you happen to know because you met them on your road, et cetera, et cetera? Those are sorts of questions which are harder to answer.
Virginia, are you persuaded?
Oh, I am just the opposite. I almost hung up. I'll just say two things, and then, because obviously this is the angle of your book, I think you're crazy. And I guess, first of all, I'm the mother of an 18-year-old who just finished applying for college. And so I have just looked at all the colleges throughout the country. I think you have a really skewed idea of what types of colleges are available for people. Sure, there are going to be areas, pockets in this country, let's say in the Northeast, maybe on the West Coast, there could be pockets in this country where there are going to be very, very expensive colleges that are very, very elite, that don't give out merit aid, things like that. But the vast majority of colleges, you can find opportunities for people. And my son, for instance, we told him we weren't going to pay for his college. He was going to have to figure out how to pay for it himself.
Virginia, we've got it. We're right up against the clock, and I apologize for that. I'm very glad that you've called. Richard Reeves, tough audience. We'll hear more from that and other perspectives. The new book is Dream Hoarders, How the American Upper Middle Class is Leaving Everyone Else in the Dust. Do you buy it? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.